Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, episode number 140. My name's Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. On today's episode, we're going to be chatting with the one and only Matt Bromley about some cutting-edge intel coming out of the Lima Charlie community Slack channel. It's another week, another set of bad actors, malicious files, and compromised systems. On today's show, we're going to be talking about some of the cutting-edge intel being shared by our awesome community in the Lima Charlie Slack channel, and a huge thank you to all those folks that take the time to share their knowledge with the rest of us. If you enjoy listening in on these intel chats and aren't in our community Slack channel yet, then you should join the conversation. Much more information than we can get through on the show is being shared there, and you will get it in real time. You can join the Slack channel at slack.limacharlie.io. And as always for these chats, I'm joined by the one and only Matt Bromley. How are you doing today, Matt?
Hey, Chris. Doing well, sir. I cannot complain. It's a good day. It's a good day today. We are currently fending off an upcoming hurricane here in North Texas. But other than that, I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to today's chat, as always.
Well, it's got to be weather in there somewhere, right?
That's right. Always, man. Always. You know my shtick. We got to talk about the weather.
Before we get into it, I want to let our listeners know that I'm going to be giving away some t-shirts and swag. So I got four different t-shirt designs to choose from, and I'm going to send them to the first 10 people that email me at defenders@limacharlie.io, or you could simply DM me on the community Slack channel. So reach out, say hello, tell me what you think about the show, and I'll send you a t-shirt.
Hey, I'm just going to say, for those of you that don't know or haven't known Chris long enough, there was a lot of care and concern that went into this process. So if I was you, I would take care of yourself on this because you're going to like what you get. I'm not going to reveal any other secrets other than you'll be very, very pleasantly happy with what you receive. If, you know, you just reach out and just send a little DM. We want to hear from you.
Awesome. Yeah. And I will say that it's actually my favorite part of my job is sending people t-shirts. So make my day, say hello.
Chief T-shirt Officer, CTSO.
I'm going to get a gun for a conference one day. One of those t-shirt guns. Yeah.
There we go. You heard it here first. Chris with the t-shirt gun shooting them out. Everyone just watch out. You might just be at a random booth at Black Cat and a t-shirt just falls in your lap.
All right, on to the intel. I thought this first headline was a little sensational, even if it's factual. Quote, "This is likely the biggest password leak ever. Nearly 10 billion credentials exposed." So in essence, a bad actor shared a file on the dark web, which contains approximately 9.9 billion unique plain text passwords. And I had to try and figure out how big this file would be, so I asked the robot, and this is what ChatGPT had for me. Assuming an average username length of 8, which I think is probably a little small given most usernames are going to be email addresses, and average passwords of 12 characters, which is probably a little big, the math works out to 202.5 gigabytes in size, which I think would probably crash most things that try and open it.
Ooh, yeah, you're not opening that in the text editor. I mean, notepad.exe might be able to. I'm not sure.
I think we might have to get it and try it.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm curious. Do you know, is it the legality of something like that? Is it illegal to possess a password file like that?
Well, the thing is, I'm going to say no right off the bat, but how'd you go about getting it? You know what I mean? It's like the ones and zeros are never going to align, Chris. I'm going to turn on my computer and all of a sudden, like, you know, there's going to be a file sitting right there. So I think it's one of those, like, how did I go about getting it? What was I looking for and whatnot? But I would say if you're curious what's in there, go to, like, Have I Been Pwned or something like that.
And that's another data point for me to go get around to getting a lawyer on the show so we can ask all these questions. Yeah. All right.
There we go. There we go. We should actually save the headlines that we go over and then say, hey, what's the legality of this one and get their thoughts on it.
All right. So the file titled rocku2024.txt is a compilation of passwords from various old and new data breaches, making it a handy resource for brute force attackers. And I quote, "The leak scale is unprecedented, with nearly 10 billion credentials exposed, highlighting the significant threat of credential stuffing attacks." And I think this is what bugs me about the article. When you first read it, it sounds like this is the result of some big breach when basically somebody just cut and paste some files together to make a ridiculously large file. Or am I reading this wrong and this is something to actually write an article about?
No, so rocku.txt, I don't want to say the original rocku, but I will just say that like rocku.txt has been kind of a standard name within like hacking Linux distros and word lists and things like that. Like rocku.txt has been the standard thing. I do feel like this is kind of like the new version of rocku. Everything I read about this, it kind of displays it as a compilation. Chris, I think you're right in that part, right? You know, like the greatest hits, if you will. But this one I think is definitely kind of a Like, okay, it sounds a little weird, but the old rockyou.txt might have been based on historical password conventions and things like that. Maybe, you know, the summer 2021 password isn't really valid anymore. So they've got to update it to be summer 2024 or whatever the nomenclature might be. That being said, I do think it's just a massive compilation in this point. Let's be clear, 10 billion credentials exposed. I mean, immediately right off the bat, that's one per human on Earth. And then every, you know, some of us have two.
And then some. Yeah.
Yeah. And then some, right? I would argue that the distribution of passwords versus humans on Earth isn't a one for one. So you're still at a 3-for-1, 4-for-1 scale, whatever it might be. That's not the point here, though. The point is, I think this is a compilation. I don't think this is an addition to every other password or credential breach we've ever heard of or talked about. I think it's just a plus, 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 plus until finally someone's like, all right, here's the new word list. Let's go. And then there's some unfortunate kid out there, Chris, who ran a Python script against this and was like, let me brute force these across an RDP and see what happens. And that thing is going to churn until you and I are 400 years old, I think.
Yeah, and I bet you there's some really neat analysis to be done on file like that. I'm surprised I haven't seen data visualizations across LinkedIn or anything like that.
I'm sure we'll see something. Who knows? Here's the thing. Let me view this in a different lens. My thing is, this doesn't really change the game of password management. Sorry, let me rephrase. This doesn't change the advice we've been giving about password management, which is change, rotate, strong password, so on and so forth. I think this amplifies the need to, right? I would be willing to bet. Not willing. I am willing to bet that a lot of the passwords in that list are probably still in use. Now, the usernames might have changed, the companies, the domains, the whatever might have changed, but I'd be willing to bet that there's plenty of folks who would read through that list and be like, ooh, yeah, that's my password. So just practice good password hygiene, and lists like this, you know, won't really work out. I mean, to be fair, Chris, like another way to think about it is, if you were to put together a random word kind of generator, like let's just say you said, okay, I'm going to take 15 characters and I'm going to do a base64 alphabet with all the special characters 1 through 0 on the keyboard. Okay. So base, you know, 70 or 72 or whatever it is, right? Let's say you just came up with an alphabet like that. And then you simply just said, okay, 15 to the 70th power, or 70 to the 15th power, whichever one it is, generate every single thing inside of this list. At some point in time, you're going to come across a double-digit percentage of passwords in the world at the end of generating all of that. So what I'm trying to get at here, everyone, is like it's not impossible to generate these things. So just practice good password maintenance. So that way when lists like this do come out, the impact is few and far between. Because remember, you need two pieces for this to work. You need username and password. And this doesn't even include MFA.
Or for the love of it all, just use 2FA.
I was going to say, or just use some other factor that makes life easier there too.
All right. So Eldorado is a newly discovered ransomware as a service, or RAS, operation targeting both Windows and Linux systems. It utilizes Golang for cross-platform functionality with ChaCha20 for file encryption, and RSA-OAEP for key encryption. Eldorado's variants include ESXi, ESXi_64, Win64, allowing it to encrypt files on shared networks via the SMB protocol. The malware was first advertised on the ransom forum RAMP in March 2024 by a Russian-speaking representative, and it does not overlap with known strains like Lockbit or Babook. The game of whack-a-mole continues. Zaymat?
If I've said it once, I've said it 10 times on this podcast alone. Cut off one, another one pops up. And I don't think it should be a surprise to anybody that we continue to see the growth and proliferation of these services here. But yeah, I mean, it comes up. I think maybe what's more interesting, and we can talk about this after you give us a few more details here, Chris, but I think the inclusion of an ESXi64 variant is actually kind of the one of interest here. We've talked before about how watching what adversaries do, and that kind of underscores a little bit of what their focus is, what their objectives are, what their target is. And Windows or ESXi is a straight, you know, very upfront. These are the things that we're targeting. This is the stuff we're going after. So they recognize the significance inside of the enterprise.
Okay, so by June 2024, Eldorado's data leak site had listed 16 victims across various industries such as real estate, education, and healthcare, with most located in the U.S. Analysis of its Windows artifacts revealed the use of PowerShell commands to overwrite lockers with random bytes attempting to erase the traces of the actor. Eldorado is part of a growing list of double extortion ransomware groups, including Arcus Media, AzaSec, and Space Bears, highlighting the persistent threat of ransomware. Space Bears. Is it okay that I like their branding, Matt?
Well, when you're used to hearing about fancy and cozy bears and then Space Bears come along, you know, I got to say, I don't know where they come up with some of these names for, but I'm not going to lie. Space Bears actually sounds kind of friendly.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, I'm just going to say, Chris, if I open my computer one day and it was like the Space Bears have taken over your data, I'd be like, can I ride?
Yeah.
Like, you got an extra seat in the shuttle or what are we doing here? You know, I'd happily go hang out with the Space Bears. I'm kidding.
Yes.
Obviously very much here. But that being said, I love how they come up with some of these names. Yeah. I really do. And I, if I'm not mistaken, and I want to say that Space Bears is actually, I think they were first debuted or discussed or disclosed, whatever the word is, by the folks over at Halcyon, halcyon.ai. And they've talked about Space Bears. They came about in 2024, if I'm not mistaken. And Space Bears, and I don't know why we're picking on Space Bears, but they've gone after like telecommunications and real estate and stuff like that. I'm just saying, Space Bears, you caught my interest for a moment there.
Yeah.
You caught my interest for a moment because that name is just so friendly. I could imagine my kids coming home and being like, hey, daddy, I drew you the Space Bears. Yeah. And I would never, ever think about a telecom company getting ransomed. Yeah. You know, now I will.
Yeah. Here we go. Okay. So further investigation into Eldorado reveals that it employs custom Python scripts for payload delivery and victim information exfiltration. Attackers have used brute force attacks on Microsoft SQL servers and phishing emails for initial compromise. The ransomware adds a .locked extension to encrypted files and has seen diverse range of targets, emphasizing the broad impact of such attacks on various sectors. I know the article did not get super technical, but did you see anything in there that would make for an obvious defense outside of vigilance, best practices, etc.?
Not that necessarily caught me off guard. I mean, let's remember, folks, we are talking about a ransomware as a service, right? We are talking about a larger kind of compilation here. Second time we've talked about compilations today. So to drill down into them a little bit further, you actually get into the kind of the pieces of malware and things like that. And then Space Bears, which, you know, we've talked about before, they've been aligned with the Phobos group. We've also seen, let me see, there's another one. Arcus Media has been associated with other ransomware as a service as well. So I really think a lot of this is just like one hand washes the other, criminals working together and things like that. I will go ahead and say that some of the things pointed out in this article include the use of Python custom scripts for payload delivery. That might be a great opportunity for detection. For anyone who listed and listening and thought to themselves, oh, dot locked, that's an extension I could look for. I definitely would detect for that, but you're way too late if you're waiting for that to happen. One that I found a little more interesting from a detection perspective here, Chris, is that there does appear to be some Linux variants in use here that go after brute forcing Microsoft SQL servers and emailing Windows systems and things like that, using a .NET based loader called PureCryptor. So I would just like utilize the ransomware as a service articles and look for the intricate technical details and be like, okay, how do I defend against these little intricate pieces of malware? Mm-hmm. And that's a distinction that folks like I want to make whenever anyone's thinking about detections, you know, how do I detect for APT, whatever? You don't.
Yeah.
You detect the technical techniques that they use. And then that may or may not roll up to that threat group. But it's more important to say I can detect malicious RDP activity than it is to say I can detect these four APT groups. Because you'd be surprised how many techniques actually straddle multiple groups.
Yeah. And like even like the failed password attempts on the SQL server there is probably a good spot to throw something.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All of these are good things to detect on and things that I would recommend definitely having in place. I mean, you know, not for nothing, but brute forcing SQL servers. I mean, that's a classic right there, you know, and that goes up there with disabling the SA account.
Yeah. Don't have them facing the internet.
That too.
Yeah.
If you can avoid that,
yeah.
That too. We won't get into databases facing the internet, Chris. We only have so many years left in our lives, sir.
Okay. On to the next one. OVH Cloud has reported mitigating a record-breaking distributed denial of service or DDoS attack that peaked at 840 million packets per second or MPPS. This attack surpassed the previous record of 809 MPPS set in 2021. The increasing frequency and intensity of these high-rate packet attacks are concerning, with more than 100 MPPS becoming a common threshold over the past 6 months. The attack's unprecedented scale highlights the escalating capabilities of attackers leveraging extensive botnets, often composed of compromised IoT devices. So I know it's not toothbrushes running Java, but essentially these DDoS attacks are being powered by the litany of poorly secured quote unquote smart things filling up our homes, right?
It's a tough thing to make that statement, but you're not wrong if that makes sense. I think this has to do a lot with unsecured devices facing the internet, period. And that can be anything in any sense and whatnot. And like the catch here is that if you go buy an internet-enabled toothbrush, it's not immediately compromised, right? It's a pattern of vulnerabilities, of weaknesses, of exploitation, of automatic things happening and stuff like that, that just happened to propagate because there's so many internet-facing things now. And that being said, we talked about this, I think, either one or two episodes ago as well, where it's a trend that we see, Chris, where you've got botnet operators who are like, I need cycles, right? I need cycles to make these attacks happen. Where can I find cycles? Ooh, CPU with extra stuff available. Fantastic. I'll take over it. It doesn't matter what is. You know, I think there's someone out there who's like, I have a 50 million IoT botnet. Not, I have 10 million toothbrushes, I have 10 million fridges, and I have 30 million lights, or whatever it might be. Yeah. It's just extra cycles. So that being said, secure your stuff and be careful what we put on the internet, facing the internet. You know, a little bit of network hygiene can go a long way.
All right. So the attack occurred on April 2024, significantly impacting OVH Cloud's infrastructure. Despite the high packet rate, OVH Cloud's mitigation strategies successfully neutralized the threat, preventing substantial service disruption. This incident underscores the necessity for robust DDoS defense mechanisms as attackers continue to enhance their techniques and tools, posing greater risk to cloud service providers and their clients. The use of IoT devices and such botnets is particularly problematic due to the difficulty in securing these often poorly protected devices, which can be easily hijacked and used in these attacks. OVH Cloud's experience reflects a broader industry challenge where service providers must continuously adapt and enhance their defense mechanisms to protect against evolving threats. The company's ability to mitigate this record-breaking attack demonstrates the importance of advanced DDoS protection strategies. As cyber threats grow in complexity, continuous investment in cybersecurity infrastructure and proactive defense measures is essential for cloud service providers and their customers. I thought this was an interesting one to share. Just for the sheer volume of packets, I'm not sure how much there is for individual defenders to do about such things, besides pick a good provider that can handle these assaults. What do you say, Matt? Is there anything individual blue teamers should be thinking about along these lines? I feel like this is the realm of cloud infrastructure engineers.
Yeah, a bit of both, Chris. I wouldn't ask every security team in the world to just go pay attention to the perimeter all of a sudden, because this is really stuff that floats in the hum of the internet. It's a phrase I've borrowed from a former colleague and used for a long time. The hum of the internet, which is just like attacks and large volumes and perimeter-based things that happen. And as a security team, you cannot be expected to keep up with all of those that come through. These are situations where you've got to rely on an external provider to kind of like, you know, move in the front of that network and help you defend against these. They've got the infrastructure and the DNS capabilities and whatever other mitigation techniques might be necessary to help deal with these types of attacks, and just go find a really good provider. I won't name any here, obviously, but there's tons of really good ones out there. And I would recommend, you know, if it's something that you're afraid of facing or afraid of dealing with, then have a plan in place. Have a plan in place for it, because, you know, it's one of those things where it can just be completely taxing on a network infrastructure to get it done. And then, Chris, to your point, right, talk to the cloud infrastructure engineers, talk to the cloud infrastructure team, the on-prem or physical infrastructure team, and figure out what a happy medium looks like in between the two. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be in a situation where you're just kind of caught out without any protection whatsoever if it is a risk that you need to mitigate or a risk that you fear might be happening. There's providers out there.
Yeah, whole companies built on the one feature.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Cisco has issued a warning about a critical remote code execution or RCE vulnerability named Regression. And the catch here is the SSH in Regression has been capitalized.
So clever.
Right? This industry is just so great at branding. This CVE is being tracked as CVE-2024-6387, affecting OpenSSH on Glibc-based Linux systems. Disclosed by Qualys, the flaw, a regression of CVE-2006-5051, allows unauthenticated attackers to gain root access by exploiting a race condition in the SSH daemon SIGALRM handler, which calls functions that are not async signal safe, such as syslog. An attacker can exploit this by opening multiple connections and failing to authenticate within the login grace time period, triggering the vulnerable signal handler asynchronously. The vulnerability impacts multiple Cisco products, including ASA software, Firepower Management Center, and various Nexus switches. Cisco is actively assessing the full scope of affected devices and has listed specific Cisco bug IDs for each impacted product. Mitigation steps, including restricting SSH access to trusted hosts, upgrading to the latest open SSH version, and setting the login grace time parameter to zero to prevent the race condition. While a proof of concept exploit exists, there are no reports of malicious exploitation so far. Cisco's Product Security Incident Response Team, or PSIRT, advises customers to apply the necessary patches and follow mitigation recommendations to safeguard their systems against potential attacks leveraging this vulnerability. Sounds like one of those that will only exist in the lab to me. Is that your read on this, Matt?
This is one where I think it was probably very much identified in a lab environment and, you know, maybe code analysis, library analysis or something like that, and then was materialized into a POC. I don't disagree that it's possible. I read some other companies or some other organizations, you know, research and analysis on this and whatnot. And it did come down to a very similar kind of finding, a very similar approach, which was that, you know, there is some POC code out there, but it didn't appear to work that they had. Nothing else has been seen in the wild. It's actually some companies with some very, very smart reverse engineers have been unable to exploit it. They're aware of it. They're just like, hey, we can't exploit this thing. You know, we're not able to. So it's one of those, like, it might be in a lab environment or it might be a very special set of circumstances that need for this to happen. Again, the fact that it was kind of like a Cisco specific announcement, it might be related to their appliances or their software. I do remember reading that there was a few other vendors with like network appliances and stuff. They were not impacted by this as well. So it might be, you know, a very specific thing that was implemented by a team.
Yep.
Again, there's been no reports of malicious use and the exploitation does require customization for it to work, which tells me it's probably a very unique set of circumstances for it to actually be successful.
Yeah. And based off of a CVE back in 2006. So I imagine a lot of stuff around it has changed and probably made it less accessible.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's usually the case too, is there's always some thing in there, some little requirement, some asterisks, which is the reason for success.
Yeah. Okay, so the last one I have for us today is just a reminder of what we're up against in terms of financial motivation. In the first half of 2024, cryptocurrency thefts amounted to $1.4 billion, significantly driven by rising crypto prices and a few large-scale attacks. The median theft size increased by 1.5 times compared to 2023, and the value increase in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum has obviously made them more attractive targets for cybercriminals. One of the major incidents so far this year involved the theft of $308 million worth of Bitcoin from the Japanese exchange DMM Bitcoin. That is many times more money than any bank heist, but I doubt you will ever see a blockbuster movie built around somebody stealing credentials and robbing a crypto locker.
You might. You never know. I mean, I'm just saying it's a ton of money walking out the door. And folks, you can say whatever you want about cryptocurrencies. Look, even if it's half, let's just say it's worth half of that, right? It's still a ton of money.
Yeah.
It's still a ton of money being taken. First half of 2024, in the first 6 months, $1.4 billion out the door in cryptocurrency. I mean, now, can that amount change? Could crypto drop by half by the time this episode is released and it would be $700 million? Sure. Yeah. It's still a ton of money.
Yeah.
You know, still a ton of money walking out the door. I think it goes to continue to speak to some of the kind of wild, wild west nature that cryptocurrency is still in, where it is still having to deal with, you know, insecure protocols, financial institutions that monitor and police these and everything like that. It's not, you know, your robust multi-billion-dollar, multi-trillion-dollar global banks. Sometimes it is a lot of money being held in insecure exchanges.
Yeah. So in 2023, crypto thefts totaled around $900 million. Partly due to a $600 million hack linked to the game Axe Infinity, which was attributed to North Korean hackers. In that attack, the attackers made off with 173,600 Ethereum and 25.5 million in USDC stablecoin by exploiting a backdoor in a remote procedure call, or RPC, node, allowing them to forge fake withdrawals using compromised private keys. The breach was discovered after a user reported an inability to withdraw funds, prompting an investigation by Sky Mavis, the creator of Axe Infinity. Man, that's an email you don't want to start your Monday with.
No, no, it's not. Not at all. Yeah. Like, just, hey, let me see. Let me just get into the office and see what's going on. Oh, my goodness. What just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you definitely don't want to be in that place at all. Yeah. I think the other thing of consideration here is just how quickly you can walk out with so much money. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be very hard to get a company to be like, hey, wire me $30 million really quick.
Yeah.
Right. But if I can find a flaw or an exploit in something that is crypto related, I can walk out of that, walk out with that money very, very quickly.
$900 million. That's just mind boggling. Yeah.
Not bad, huh? Not bad. $900 million.
Makes a weekly paycheck look a little skint, doesn't it?
Just a hair. Yeah. Just a hair. Unless you're Jeff Bezos and, yeah, you know, it's another day.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. So all of this obviously highlights the ongoing challenges in securing cryptocurrency ecosystems against increasingly sophisticated threats and the geopolitical implications of such cybercrimes. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, cryptocurrency is a cool technology solution looking for a problem to solve. That's biggest contribution to society is opening the world up to cyber criminals. I know that's probably going to make a few people upset, but hey, get at me. Come on the show. Let's talk about it. Defenders@limacharlie.io. Matt, anything else you want to add to this one?
Folks, if you got cryptocurrency, you're holding anything, just lock that thing down in a hard wallet. Be careful. Just make sure it's in a secure location because there's an adversary who will walk out of it regardless of how much it is. And it may be a volatile industry and you're holding. But that being said, secure it and be careful where you're storing your stuff because oftentimes your crypto is only as secure as the weakest, you know, weakest link in the chain. And sometimes that weakest link might be the place where you're holding it. So
yeah.
If you want to hold it, you want to be a cryptocurrency person, I would recommend hard wallets. That's the only advice I can give.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing that I've ever been told or that I know. There might be some other exchange out there, which is the most secure thing ever.
Yeah. And just remember, most of those exchanges aren't insured too. It's not like a bank where if something happens to your money, the insurance company comes to bail you out. It's just gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But no, other than that, folks, just be safe and secure out there.
All right. Okay, Matt, thanks again for showing up. Another one in the books. I can't believe it's 140, I think, this one. It's kind of wild.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Congratulations, sir. Yeah. Made it all that way.
Keep going. All right. Thanks.
There we go.
Take care.
Great to be here. Thanks, Chris. Bye.
And that concludes this episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas for future topics, please send an email to defenders@limacharlie.io. You can access the intel we talk about on the show in real time and join the conversation on the Lima Charlie Community Slack channel at slack.limacharlie.io. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with someone or leaving a rating or review. And don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening from. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you on the next episode.